Well, thank you. That's wonderful to be here, and thanks to everyone for your interest in history. What I can say is that I look back, the year was 1994, and I'm pretty certain that was the year, Dick, and when this plane, I was here at Oshkosh with my 10-year-old son, and his first time at Oshkosh, and I walk out onto the Warbird flight line, and I just dreamed that maybe someday I might have a Warbird of some kind. I was in the Staggerwing Club and group, and I had a Staggerwing project, but it was a long way from being ready. And I knew of Dick Hansen, of course, and but I didn't really know him that well, but I knew him. And in 1994, I'm here when a great guy, Bill Dodds, taxied in with Dick and Jim's airplane. And I'm just fascinated by, in particular, this airplane and its history. I'd spent some time in the Navy, a naval reservist, and spent time at Pensacola, and that's another long story. But I had, I knew Navy history pretty well, and I knew about the first 2 years of the war and what an incredible presence the F-4F Wildcat made in those first 2 years of the war. So I was, and then I was totally fascinated by how original this plane appeared to be. And talking to Bill Dodds and then later Dick Hansen. But again, I never imagined that I would own this airplane and get to fly it for 9.5 years. And the privilege of being able to fly it and demonstrate it here at Oshkosh in 2004, I think 2007, other in California and other parts of the country, always being incredibly well received by people. And of course, now here we are in 2021, and many of those people aren't here anymore, that I can still imagine and see myself out there on that flight line. And thanks to Rod Lewis and Conrad Hussettler, I was privileged to be able to sit in the plane again for the first time just this morning. But to be there and just be standing there in dressed about like this and have, and this would be 2003, four, up until the time that Rod Lewis acquired the plane from me. And the scene would typically be every time here'd come an older man with his family, and the scene would unfold like this time and time again. And as they approached the plane, maybe a granddaughter, a grandson, or a son or daughter would say, "Is this what you flew in the war?" And the man would say, "Yes, that's the plane I flew." And then a comment like, "Well, it seems bigger than we imagined it." Or, and then pretty soon, maybe they'd look around, and I'd be standing there observing. "Can you tell us about this airplane?" I'd say, "Sure, I can tell you some things about it." And then at that point, pretty soon, "Would you be the pilot?" And I said, "Well, yes, I am." And those experiences, and I could sit here for the next many hours talking about them. And of course, I think that's why you're here, why we're here. And it was a tremendous honor and a tremendous privilege to be able to fly that airplane and tribute to our veterans, not just the aviators, but really all our veterans and their families.
So one of the things you saw in the video was, I say we do this to present it to the present and future generations. So thanks to these gentlemen and Mr. Lewis, we have passed it on to the next generation. Conrad, it's your stage.
Well, thank you. Well, I'm ecstatic to be here this year, and I'm so proud to bring this airplane with me. I want to thank Lewis Air Legends for trusting me with this one-of-a-kind airplane, and let me wrench on it and bring it up here so all y'all could see it. Rod Lewis owns the airplane now. Lewis Air Legends maintains it. He does a really good job of keeping it happy and healthy, and we're so happy that it's out flying around. We're able to bring it up here to Oshkosh and show it off. I want to talk a little bit about the airplane itself. It's there's probably about 13 Wildcats flying right now, and all of those except for this airplane were not built by Grumman. They were built by General Motors. So this airplane is rare in the fact that it is a true Grumman-built Wildcat, and it is the earliest variant, the F4F-3. So the wings do not fold. It's got a twin row 14-cylinder Pratt & Whitney 1830. So it's a bit of a different engine than what we're used to on the Wildcat. I had the pleasure when I was a little younger, 21 to 24 years old, to rebuild an FM2 Wildcat, and I got to bring it up here to Oshkosh in 2013, and we did a shotgun start, had a fun time with it, but it didn't carry the history that this airplane does. This airplane fought the war in the early years when this was all we had. So I don't think the Wildcat gets enough attention. We all like to focus on the Mustangs and the Corsairs, but in fact, this was our only fighter entering the war, and it kind of carried us for the first couple of years. So I'll leave it at that. I'd love to talk about it and answer questions. And
we've got time for a few questions and answers. Anybody got a question?
Let me say something quickly.
You want to do one?
Okay. So one of the things I'm always asked when I'm interviewed by the media, they always say, how many people does it take to do what you do? And they're talking about my crew at A&T Recovery. Well, that's not how many people it takes. To do what we do, it takes thousands and thousands of people. The equipment, the technology, the restorers, the historians, and they all have to act together. And I always say, all those people are my family. So I'm going to ask you guys to do something right before this ends. And it's the most sane thing you've ever heard. After we're done with the questions, these gentlemen and I are going to go right there, and I want a group photo with all of you who are part of our family. You guys up for it? So wherever the professional photographers are, get ready to take that photo. Now we're ready for a few questions, and then we'll do that photo, okay?
First, little lady here.
Right behind you or up there?
Yeah, I wonder if you would just expound on, you took a survey of this area, the bottom of Lake Michigan, to find out what particular aircraft were down there. Was that a bartering chip to take possession of this aircraft? Because I know the Navy, as far as they're concerned, it's ours in perpetuity wherever it lays. And I guess unlike the Air Force, you know, if you recover something, you have to kind of have a deal, I don't know if it's official or under the table, in exchange for taking...
Yeah, the Navy lost it, so it's the Navy. So you're right, it was a bartering chip. A&T Recovery side-scan surveyed the southern basin of Lake Michigan and located the aircraft. So it was a bargaining chip. We were the only people who knew where they were.
Next question.
Question for Tara also. You had said earlier that approximately 130 aircraft had been lost in Lake Michigan and approximately 50 have been recovered.
Actually, more 50 by in what I would consider contemporary from 1975 until present day. They actually had a recovery operation during the war where they recovered aircraft that crashed in shallow water. So I estimate 10 to 15 they recovered during the war. So I think there's about 60 to 70 still on the bottom.
How many of those would you estimate are recoverable?
With the involvement of the Naval History and Heritage Command, none.
It's a shame.
And those of you who know, the Naval History and Heritage Command is the most bureaucratic, communist, socialist, can you tell my political leanings, organization in the U.S. government that ever existed. They're telling me to stop. Anyway.
I think one of the things that... Is this?
Go ahead.
I guess I'm on. I think one of the things that Taurus, in the progression of recovering these airplanes, has discovered... the quagga mussel, zebra mussels, and pollution and stuff is getting worse, and these airplanes are deteriorating at an increasingly fast rate.
Yeah, they excrete uric acid like we do, so the aircraft are in a uric acid bath all the time now. But the archaeologists there think, oh, they're in situ, and we're watching them corrode to nothing, and we're learning something. Yeah, right. Okay. Go ahead. And then the youth behind you also. Go ahead.
Well, thank you for what you do, restoring all these warbirds. I think that's something great that you all do. But I wanted to know if this is Butch O'Hare's paint scheme for his wildcat.
Wait, could you repeat that?
Is this Butch O'Hare's paint scheme for his wildcat, or is this another wildcat?
Yeah. So this wildcat obviously isn't Butch O'Hare's actual airplane, but it was painted as accurately as possible to represent his airplane. One of the really interesting things that happened recently is I believe Paul Allen did a expedition and found the USS Lexington, the original USS Lexington that had sunk, and they got a bunch of really neat pictures, and I recommend you go look them up. But on the bottom of the ocean you can see Butch O'Hare's actual wildcat still in great condition and quite deep down.
I've seen that picture. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you all for what
you
do.
We'd like to recover that.